Hello and welcome to the PT Nation podcast, where we discuss all things related to the art and business of what it is we do. I'm your host, Greg Vaughn, and today's guest is Lindsay Vastola. Lindsay is an editor for PFP Media and the founder and president of Body Project. Lindsay basically talks about her journey today of jumping into the fitness industry. We talk about life as a business owner, a trainer, a mom of a four-year-old. She really gets into a lot of great life and business advice, a lot of marketing strategies, and why communication is key. Really hope you guys enjoy today's episode. Before we get into today's episode, we want to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Pat Rigsby. Pat's been in the industry for over 20 years. He's got his new book out, The Fitness Entrepreneur's Handbook. So definitely check that out in the show notes. Pat is always giving away bonuses. He's on a mission to help fitness professionals around the world build their ideal business. So if nothing else, guys, at least go to Pat Rigsby's site and, you know, get in on his daily emails. He sends them out every day religiously. They are extremely valuable. So, Pat, thank you for bringing this episode to PT Nation. Without further ado, let's get into it. And welcome back, PT Nation. Extremely excited to announce another amazing guest today, Lindsay Vastola. And, Lindsay, if you could give our listeners a little bit about your backstory and what it is you do now.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Greg. I always love doing things like this. Helps us all keep the finger on the pulse on the industry, right? Sure. So just kind of who I am, where I came from in a nutshell. I'm actually by initial trade. I started in the corporate realm. I was always an athlete through high school and college, everything from a cheerleader to the scrum half on my rugby team in college. So I've really seen the gamut. My dad put me on a squat rack when I was like 11 years old. And so the gym and fitness has always been really a center part of my personal life, which, as we all know, always ties into our professional as well. In high school and in college, I was a student athletic trainer, which really gave me a great foundation for biomechanics and, you know, having a woman after a hip surgery and, you know, come in and rehab. And then also when I was in college working with Division I athletes, you know, seeing kind of the different side, but at the end of the day, it's all biomechanics. And I loved it and I loved doing it. I always tease that I thought going into college I had to do something bigger and more important, like international politics. And so I went to school and got a degree in international politics. And I worked in New York City for about seven, 8 years and managed a pretty big division. It was a $42 million department and, you know, 30 staff underneath of me. And it was a very typical New York City corporate life. I commuted 2 hours each way. I traveled the world. And, you know, young out of college, it was great money and it was great experience, a lot of which I bring into my own business and career now. But I knew deep down if I didn't put the kibosh on that early, I would get stuck like a lot of people do. So I very unexpectedly left that position and started my business. And my dad was an entrepreneur, and I think I've always known deep down that I wanted to, you know, so cliche, but I wanted to have more control over my destiny, if you will. So left and went back to getting into, you know, my certifications. And and I really, you know, I started my business. So in January 2017 will be 10 years that I started the business. And I started with, I think it was $634. No, it was $364 that I had from an old high school account that I used just to kickstart getting my certifications and put my first advertorial in a local paper. And that's where I got my first clients. And I was really fortunate. I pretty quickly grew my book of personal training from there. I did at-home personal training. That then morphed into, you know, realizing that there's only so many hours in the day. I was driving around more, and in essence, I was working more hours than I was when I was in Manhattan. So I moved to the boot camp model. I was one of the first I live in central New Jersey, and so one of the first in the area when that was the outdoor boot camps really became more known, if you will. So moved from the, did the outdoor boot camp model, was very successful with that. We had three different locations, created a fantastic community, learned a lot from a business and marketing and funnels and from that standpoint. But then again, there's always that ceiling because we rented space from facilities, community facilities, and you're very limited in terms of what you can do. So I moved from there to, I opened up a physical studio. We have about 2,700 square feet. Now we do primarily small group and mid-sized group training. We have, I have a signature 8-week body project program. That's a lifestyle, very comprehensive program. And so that's sort of my business, hands on the pulse. That's, you know, 80% of what I do. In the interim of all of this, what I really found in the industry, and I hope I'm not jumping too far ahead, Greg, so stop me anytime.
You're good. Keep going.
I guess now it was probably 3 to 4 years into the business. From the very beginning, I think I realized maybe it was just because of my upbringing with an entrepreneur father and a very savvy mom, if you will. She raised us as a single mom, and so, you know, you just make things work. And when I started the business, I found it very difficult to find information about how to do the business of personal training, or how to create a business around it. So how to market, and social media really at the time was pretty, it was pretty new. It was novel. There wasn't a lot of information about it. So social media, but just marketing and everything down to what forms do I need to give my clients. So it was pretty limited, and it frustrated me a little bit that everything that I found, in terms of even the caliber and the quality of information provided, I just never felt really reflected what I believe the industry should. So you have a lot of these stereotypes of the industry, like, oh, you're a personal trainer, it must mean you're a gym rat, and kind of discredited our ability to actually run really bona fide, successful businesses. So I started going to different conferences, and I happened to come across a woman who, I think by just literally Googling, I somehow came up and found PFP Magazine, Personal Fitness Professional Magazine. And it was the first print publication that I found anyway, and online resource that really talked about the career, the trends in fitness, not in terms of how to get six-pack abs, but the trends of the career, the business, marketing, the future of being a fitness professional. And I said, this is kind of aligned with where I'd love to do what I can for the industry. So whether it might be happenstance or circumstance or, the moon's aligning, I met at the time, the editor of the magazine, and we became, created a good relationship. And when she was ready to move on, she approached me and she said, because I'd written a few articles, and she said, you know, would you ever be interested in being the editor? And it's funny, I never told her out loud, but the minute I met her, I was like, I kind of want your job. I enjoy writing. I enjoy, being able to communicate these things, and I think that our industry really needs that. So I feel like my role in the industry is sort of twofold. You know, I love teaching. I love managing a team. I love the business that really, of marketing and sales, that excites me, and I know what we're doing gives a lot of purpose and changes lives. On the other hand, I feel like my role as the editor of PFP gives me a lot of opportunity to also help up-level our industry, because there is so much opportunity, and really help weed out those who kind of drag us down, if you will, and really up-level people who are serious about the career. So I don't know if that was the tiny nutshell you wanted of my background, but there
for
it is.
Sure, for sure. I think you mentioned a few things there. You know,
yeah.
That was good. That was good.
We're done. We're good.
That was awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's the show, guys. Thanks for
listening. There you go.
So, within all that, man, I've got 1,000 questions for you. I guess I'll start with right now. So, you know, you still own your studio, so you're in there, and then you're also the editor of PFP. How much time are you spending on each of those projects?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and something I ask myself all the time. I think, and this is, I think, a mistake. I don't want to say a mistake, maybe a weakness or a place I see a lot of frustration for fitness professionals in particular, is balancing. You know, I have a 4-year-old. I'm actually expecting my second in February. So you have the personal dynamic that is always at play, and we can't lose that. But for me, these are two areas of my life that give me a lot of purpose. So how do I juggle from a timing standpoint? For me, if you were just to ask me my tangible strategies, I really, as best as possible, try to chunk my time. So, for example, you know, my Mondays and my Wednesdays are my big training days where over time, now this did not happen overnight. When I first opened the studio, I was here every day. I was here at 4:30 in the morning, you know, went home in the afternoon for a handful of hours, came back in the evening, and then you're trying to run the business, right? So I was very training heavy at the beginning. However, where I think a lot of fitness professionals, that's very short. It's got to be short-lived. If I knew at the time, I said, I can't progress my business unless I take myself out of the training. Now, I don't want to take it out entirely because I enjoy it and I think it's important for us to stay in it, but I knew I needed to be more efficient. So, and I also knew when I had my boot camp model business, I actually wasn't training at all. I'd go and co-train or sub, but my business was so successful at the time because I could work on the business. I could market, I could sell. So that for me became a goal. I said, I know that if I can focus on those things, because that's I'm good at those things, I can manage a team to make them great trainers. Nobody needs to be me. And I think a lot of fitness professionals think nobody can train like me, nobody can do it like me. But if you have that open mind, you're able to then parlay and train that experience with those people you're trying to replicate, if you will, and bring their own strengths to do that part of it. So in terms of my time, I try to chunk my time two and a half days, if you will, where I'm still doing a fair amount of training, but then being really laser focused on, you know, for the magazine comes in ebbs and flows. So it's sort of seasonal depending. So we go through a big push when we're putting out an issue. So I know I just need to carve out that time. So I'd say, you know, 80% of my time is really focused on my business. And then the other 20%, which sometimes in those moments where we're at a peak feels like 80%, but it's really about focusing, and carving out the time. In terms of managing it, Sundays, this is one of my sort of life non-negotiables. Every Sunday night, I sit down and, most of us write to-do lists, right? Except to-do lists can be very inefficient because they don't siphon when you need to get them done and they don't prioritize. So on Sunday night, I just do a big brain dump of everything I need to get done. And I divide it into, okay, what do I need to do for marketing? What do I need to do for sales? What do I need to do for team management, business management, for PFP? Then what I do is I look at my real life schedule for the next week. You know, what deadlines do we have coming up? What events do we need to promote? You know, what's my schedule from a real life standpoint? We all know there are weeks that are busier than others. Then I map out, okay, here's my goal for Monday, here's my goal for Tuesday, and I take my to-do list and map it out across the week. I've learned about myself that I need to be realistic with my time management, so I usually put no more than 3 to 4 big tasks. And I know Monday and Wednesday, I'm not going to get as much done, so I put 1 or 2 important things and then open up my other days. So I think that some of those tangible things are really important, not just to do the to-do list because to-do lists are overwhelming, but actually hold yourself accountable to specific days, carve out the time. I usually leave the end of my weeks a bit open because I know what happens. Stuff gets pushed to the end of the week, but if I have that committed, I'm never going to get to it. So, yeah, that's really how I think I try to manage time, especially with all the commitments going on.
Oh, that's great advice, and congratulations on
thank you
baby number 2
on thank the way. You very much. Yes,
and I've actually had a lot of female personal trainers reaching out to me for one, getting a woman on PT Nation. So and you'll actually be the second one. So so I have worked on that. Forgive me, PT Nation. I'm trying. But I've also had questions from, you know, so from my end, you know, I have a daughter who's going on 2 years old, yeah, and have a wife, and I do have a life outside of, you know, my facilities. Yeah. And it is very difficult to manage. But from your perspective of actually being a mom and having baby number 2 on the way, what advice can you give to other trainers that are going through, you know, the similar life circumstances, I guess?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I don't know if there's ever you ever master it. So much of this is mindset. So at the very beginning, when I first had my son, and I had the brilliant idea of, let me have a new baby and open up a 2,700 square foot studio,
right,
all within about 3 months of each other. So, you know, changing diapers and signing leases. And that was okay. You know, I guess my mindset is, all of these things are generally short-lived. So your two-year-old, you know, right now it might feel like craziness and mayhem, but if we're always looking ahead of, you know, this is going to pass, and how can I be the most efficient right now at this moment, not creating these, not setting ourselves up for failure? I mean, the funny thing is, all this stuff we tell our clients. Right? So, you know, you got to do what's within your control. The whole guilt issue is really, I think, really something that wreaks havoc on a lot of us. So, especially in the evenings when I have to come back out to the studio or I have a commitment, you start that self-talk of, oh, I really should be here for my kid and this and that. And I always remind myself, but you know what? This gives me such purpose. I'm a better mom because I'm doing this. I think another thing we do as parents or business owners, whether we're a parent or not, is we try to multitask. So I remember it was a moment of epiphany for me. I had my phone in one hand answering emails. I had my baby on my hip on the other hand. And I thought that this is great. I can run a business. I can be a mom. I can be a wife and cook fabulous dinners. I can do it all. and then I realized, you know, the baby's crying on my hip. I'm frustrated because I can't get to this important email immediately, or in my mind, in terms of the timely fashion that I'd like it to. And I said, me trying to multitask, nobody's winning. So when I'm here in my business, I'm in my business. I'm not spending the time, you know, oh, I feel so bad that I'm not with my son, and when I'm with my son, with my family, I've got to be all in. So I think this is one thing in our life that being all or nothing is really important, in my perspective anyway, because then we're completely immersed in our family. We don't feel like we're taking it away by checking email or so on. And is it perfect? No, by all means. But I think that energetically, I think that can fuel. I think respecting our time is really important, and putting parameters on our time. Things like, you know, I used to give my time away for free all the time. People want to meet with you. They want to, hey, can I just talk to you about my program? When you start putting a value on your time, not just from a monetary standpoint, like a dollar value, but also in terms of putting real parameters on, this is when I work and this is when I don't. So if you want to meet me, here are my hours. I'd be happy to meet with you. Whether you charge them or not, that's, you know, a decision you make. But people will respect your time more when you start putting parameters around them, and you don't, there's not that abuse that I know a lot of trainers experience, because they feel like they're being pulled by everybody and then they're overworking and then they end up resenting it. So
for sure. And that is great advice. And along those same lines, as far as developing a solid foundation, a solid career in personal training or somewhere along, you know, this industry, what advice can you give as far as the people who are out there still training from, you know, 5 a.m. through 8 p.m.? How do we take that and make it something to where we can also have a life, you know, outside of the industry, and something we can maybe even retire on one day?
Right, and actually have a meaningful career. This is a really tricky question, because there's so many different facets to it. I think from the very get-go, so much of it is mindset. So you can't, I know a lot of people get into the industry and they're like, I'm going to do it on the side, or I'm going to do this, you know, for fun. You have to value the service that you're offering. So if you're undercutting your pricing, for example, because you think that's the only way you're going to get clients, you're going to be working, you know, 10 times as hard to make the same kind of money that you could by really targeting and finding the right kind of clientele that will help support that. Now, easier said than done, but I'll give you my example. So when I started, I never worked as a trainer in a gym. I have enough experience in gyms to know what I would not want to be in terms of a trainer in a gym. But so I started right out, you know, my own business. And, you know, at first when I was doing the personal training, I modeled it after what the gyms were doing. I did packages of 10, and I was looking around at other places to see how much they were charging. And what I was doing was undercutting my pricing, thinking that that would attract more people. Well, what I'm basically telling a potential client is I'm cheaper. Well, not just by cost, but people associate price with value. You know, we know the saying, like, you get what you pay for most of the time. So hopefully you can deliver if you're charging a service. But until you value your education, the investment you put into yourself to actually be a good quality fitness professional, then once you actually value what you do, then you have to be able to communicate that with your clients to be able to help them understand why I'm charging what I am. Because if you go to the gym, I'm just going to use sort of the gym, you know, if you go down to the gym down there and the guy's charging $40, yeah, it might be cheaper, but what's his experience? Is he fully qualified? Problem with our industry is not so much the unqualified trainers. I think it starts with educating the consumer, because if our consumer, and I think they're becoming more educated, but if we can educate people more about how important it is to have an educated trainer, they'll start seeking them out. And then they'll start valuing, okay, I'll pay a little bit more for somebody who's not going to get me injured, who's going to bring me back, you know, after I do physical therapy on an injury, who's going to keep me healthy and safe. But we have to communicate that with clients, not just, here's my rate, and, you know, I'm cheaper than the next guy, or if you buy 10, you get 5 free. You know, discounting often then discounts the value we can give them. So to backtrack to my business, so I went to, you know, I did personal training, and then when I moved to the group model, we were charging, you know, and our rates are right around here still, is $200 a month. And we were the first sort of that boutique shop higher end in town, and we're not attracting, you know, we live in a middle class, maybe upper middle class area. We're not attracting the people who are making boatloads of money. We're attracting people who value the service we give them. So they value, and because of the way we sell it. So things I say is, you know, imagine having a personal trainer, but in this great group dynamic. So you have the benefits of, you know, individualized attention, individualized exercise, but you have it in the support of this great group, great community, which so many people are craving, and why they like group exercise, for example, at a gym. But you start talking about the benefits and what they're getting paid for, or what they're paying for, and then what the cost is if they don't. So you could get a personal trainer for one-on-one sessions at $70 an hour, or you can pay $15 a session and actually get more out of, you know, your month, for example. But you have to give people perspective of what that dollar amount is. So what I found is that by sticking to what my rates were, knowing exactly who I was targeting, going back to your question of how do I balance now growing a career with the, you know, like a meaningful, even from a, let's frankly, what you're asking is how do we support ourselves on the financial side of it without beating ourselves into the ground. We have to stay steadfast in who we're targeting, make sure that the target is viable, or we can do it in a way that is supportive. We have to work the numbers, and then stay so zero focused on those people and not get, you know, shiny object syndrome where you're like, oh, I'm going to do that. Really stay zero focused. And that takes some time. You're not going to figure that overnight. But if the long run, that's what you're looking at, you're going to make those micro steps there. And I think that can lead to a really meaningful career. And that's where other opportunities sort of spawn from that.
That is awesome. And a big thing, you know, you mentioned there was just being able to stay focused on what you think is going to work with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going in that direction, is there a career, I guess, in all one-on-one training anymore? I know there has been, but I know the direction of the industry. There's a lot of the small groups, a lot of boot camps. Right. There's, you know, different platforms now for online. Where is it headed? What would you recommend?
That's a really good question. I don't know if I can say definitively. I think here's the answer. It depends.
Right.
and here's why it depends. The personal trainers, the one-on-one personal trainers who I see are really successful and support a meaningful career, are those who are more educated. So they invest in themselves. They're going to conferences. They're continuing, doing their continuing education because they use that then to parlay into educating their clientele. The personal training, the trainers that I see successful with one-on-one training are also specialized. And I don't mean specialized in terms of even necessarily type of training, but they understand who they're best with and who they attract. So all, athletes. So one-on-one trainers with athletes. Very successful because that's who they're targeting, as long as they're charging enough for what they feel from an hourly standpoint. And their model is smart and long-term, if you will. So there's some predictability to it. Others are, I call it, you guys, you might have, be familiar with the term of psychographic. So a lot of times we think demographic. Well, demographics, if you ask me what my demographics are at my studio, I'd say it's, the woman from, 35 to 65 years old, upper middle income. It doesn't tell me anything. There's a million of those around me. I live in central New Jersey. We're very populated. But if I understand who my client is, like from their psychographics, what's their pain points? What are they frustrated by? What kind of help do they need? What do they want? So they want to lose weight, but they need support and community and an educated, valuable trainer, coach, if you will, in order to get them there. So that's how I develop marketing, and that's how we develop our sales and the events that we do and things, is by being so target focused on the who the person really is, not just the 35-year-old, mom. So we want to be really, really zeroed in and focused. And I think the trainers that I see, the one-on-one trainers who are successful doing that, also the trainers that are really respectful of their time. So they're valuing their time. Their clients know, I've got to get in with this trainer because they're in demand and these are the hours that he works. Then they're more likely to, be busier and have a more meaningful long-term career because it's setting it up for that. I don't know if that's where, you're thinking, but I think that, I don't think that it's completely out of the scope of, I don't think we should push to the side that one-on-one training is obsolete. I definitely don't think so. I think there's still a lot of people who need it and who want it. We just have to do it a little bit more in a more approachable way, because going to a personal trainer can also be very intimidating for people. So that could be, that niche that you really work into.
For sure. No, that was great. And, when you touched on psychographics, I think that is a huge thing that we forget about. We're trying to, just focus again, like you said, okay, how many people live in this area? What ages are they? Mm-hmm. Do they want to lose weight or build muscle? And that's almost as far as a lot of trainers go when actually mm-hmm. trying to build a model. As you said, in marketing, really relaying the message and educating and relaying your value,
mm-hmm.
you've got to take that to a deeper scale. So could you go a little bit deeper into what you do in your business to
sure.
determine the psychographics, as well as how you even bring that across in your marketing strategies and in your sales?
Absolutely. So if you look at a lot of my sales copy, a good example, if you go to my website, I have our 8-week body project. And a lot of people, they look at long sales copy and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so long. It's always worked for me because I can take a woman through a conversation that's basically in their head. So one of the most, I had a coach once that told me, when it comes to sales and marketing, you have to sell them what they want, but give them what they need. So sell them what they want, give them what they need. So women think they want, I'm going to use women in fat loss because that's kind of, the core of my clientele. So they come and they're like, I want to lose weight. Okay, sure. I mean, a lot of women do, right? The women who come here are very different, though. I can tell you my clientele, this is who my core client is. She's a woman who is probably, from an age standpoint, 35 to 60 years old. The woman generally, she probably has kids. Her kids are generally older, meaning like middle, high school, college, and beyond. So they're left. So these women aren't, I used to think, postnatal, new moms, perfect, category for me. They all want to lose weight. Nope, because they're not focused on themselves. They're focused their time, money, energies, everything on the kids. So yes, while they need help, right now they're not going to pay, they're not going to commit for real change, because that's just the part of their life that they're in. Women who come to us are frustrated because they've tried every diet on the planet. They've gone to the big box gyms and they feel lost, they feel anonymous, they feel like nobody cares, there's no accountability. Women come here because they need accountability. They know they need accountability. They want accountability. They also are exhausted. So most of them are working professionals. A lot of them are and moms. And they're realizing that what they used to do or what they've tried to do, it's like the definition of insanity. They've tried all the diets. They've tried all the gyms. They finally realize they can't do it on their own. So now they finally value having somebody who can give them a structured, accountable program and the education. Women who come here appreciate the education that we give them. They appreciate us correcting their form. They want to be, they don't want to get injured. Their fear of injury, their fear of, not being able to just do the things that they do on a normal basis. So you have to tap into the fears. And I don't mean that in like an abusive or perverse way. But if you know what they're afraid of, you can start talking to them in that way and then bring the positive light. So like I said, in my copy for our lifestyle program, we talk about, what are the questions women in their head, they're asking, it's so cliche, but, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you feel like you've tried everything? Do you feel like, you go to a big box gym and you go for a few days and then you stop? Are you all or nothing? A lot of women are all or nothing. So January 1st through January 21st, they go to the gym every day, but nothing is sustainable. Do you feel like you can't stick with anything? So these are questions that women say in their own head when they look in the mirror. If I can bring them out and say, I get it, and here's my solution. Here's how we're going to make this not easy, but we're going to give you tools. We're going to give you education. We're going to give you strategy. And here's the stories of other women just like you with the same frustrations and questions. Here's how they've done it. And then here's the easy first step for you to come in and see if this can work for you too. I think that's really important to understand that. So I don't know. I hope that gives a good picture. But I always go back to who is our core woman. Not from an age, income, standpoint, what are her fears? Because that's what she wants to find solutions for. So if I'm selling them what they want, I'll still talk about weight loss or fat loss. I'll still talk about, feeling strong and being lean and so on. But as they go through talking more and more, women deep down, they know, well, it's the chicken or the egg, right? If I take care of myself, and I make better choices, but I actually just need a little bit of structure for those better choices, then I'll feel better, and then I'll look better, and then every other aspect of my life will change. But we can't just, sell feeling energetic and amazing, your life will change. You've got to tap into the real emotional part of it in order to get them to buy in.
That's perfect. And, you literally laid kind of everything out. So instead of just assuming that you're the first stop for this clientele, or assuming that it's all about what the scale says or the size of clothes, you've been able to really understand your clientele and just dive deeper into it. Do you have any resources or anything that you use to actually be able to understand each of your clients and give them exactly what they need?
Sure. Well, I was actually going to give a resource. It's Dan Kennedy wrote a book called The Sales Letter. I think there's like 7 different versions of it now, but it's a really quick, easy, pretty, straightforward read. That for me was a big eye opener because it kind of takes you step by step in how to write. I know that's a big question, especially as an editor, I get a lot is, how do you become a better writer. Now, there's a few different types of writing, right? You have sales, writing sales copy is very different. Writing, you know, an educational piece is very different. Writing a motivational piece is very different. But you can also tie all of those together. So my email marketing, for example, I always bring in educational components. So if I'm talking about why the number on the scale doesn't matter, I'm going to start educating them about body composition. But I'm going to tie in, you know, tapping into some of those emotional fears and frustrations that they have, and then tease in that teasing, you know, well, here's what I can do to help you. So it's not a direct sale. It's a... It's education sort of with these peppered like suggestions of, well, here's what I can do to help. And so remind me to go back. So just in terms of resources of how to sell and so on, is that what you, did I answer that? Or
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you did it really well. And that ties in with, you know, going into the writing and even all the way back to what we were saying with psychographs. And once you've understood that, even tying in marketing, so that's basically what you're doing is, again, you're taking all those skills you've developed and, you know, combining them to really fit into your business model.
Right. I think one thing trainers can, especially if you're an entrepreneurial trainer, really, either way, it's so much of it is relationships and trust. So I'm not going to think of the last big purchase that you bought. You know, I don't know, let's use a car. If you go in, maybe that's not a good example because nobody really trusts the car salesman. but, you know, if you think about even your house, you know, if you want somebody, you know, buying or selling your house or investing in something, you want to trust the person that you're purchasing from. So that's why you always think, you know, oh, I got a guy who sells cars and he's a friend of mine and he'll give you a good deal. You kind of have this inherent trust. But now imagine if that car salesman, maybe he's not going to sell you. Like I said, cars aren't a good example because we're usually buying a car because the other one we have broke down. So it's sort of like a decision out of need. But usually for our services, there's not, unless there's like an acute, like a doctor says, you have to start exercising and lose weight or you're going to keel over in 3 months. When it comes to general, and I'm presuming most of us on the call are, who are listening, are probably general weight loss clientele or just general health. Somebody's not going to pick up the phone and make a phone call to basically admit that they need help, that they're out of shape. That's a really hard thing for somebody to do. Why infomercials work so well is because you can pick up a phone. Nobody, they hear your voice, but they don't have to see you. So a lot of these fitness products and fit and diet, you know, pills and things, they use info products because you don't have to see anybody, right? You pick up the phone, there's no vulnerability in somebody looking at you or judging you because all you're giving them is your phone and your credit card number. They don't know what you look like. Walking into a studio or a gym and saying, I'm overweight, I haven't exercised ever, I need help, is very, very hard for people to do. But if you start creating a relationship and creating a bond of trust, even for people you may not know, that will make it that much easier for them to come in. You probably have heard of the know, like, and trust factor. So if they know who you are, they might know you exist in town or at the gym. But that's not enough to get somebody to hand over their credit card and everything vulnerable to you. They have to like you, which is pretty obvious, but then they have to trust you. And the way to build trust is to get them to know you. So email marketing for me has been the best method of sales for me. So I have clients who tell me, Lindsay, I've been on your email list for 6 years and I'm finally ready to come in and commit. And that's okay with me because those people end up being the best long-term clients. Those we've tried, you know, I used to do sort of the hard sell, come in, get a discount, get a free this, do a 21-day program. Those can certainly be feeders, but for, I'd say, the majority of my business, it's come from nurturing people through email, through social media, through events even locally that we do, that just keep coming back, and when they're ready, then they're ready. And you don't even have to sell them. It's sort of like, okay, when do I come and what do I do? You don't have to do a hard pitch. You don't have to do the hard sell because they already trust you. So the email marketing, you know, including personal stories of you, of your clients, sharing things that work for you, sharing things that might help them. When you give and give and give, you're going to get it back. So I think that that's really important for trainers to spend some concerted effort on a regular, consistent basis, is nurturing the people who are their potential clients, but also those who are current clients.
That's phenomenal advice. And I think a huge takeaway as well is just for trainers out there is kind of pick a platform and begin to do it. A lot of trainers at that point, at least from my experience, again, there's so many different directions and platforms that we can be on now with technology, is sometimes we, I guess, overanalyze before we actually start acting. What advice could you give us in that regard?
I think that's really true, because I've been stuck in that too, where it's like, oh, I have to be on Twitter, right? I need to be on this, I need to do that. You've got to pick a platform where you know your clients are. My clients generally are not on Twitter. So I use Twitter for my, you know, separate sort of career professional, you know, whether it's speaking or writing or so on, or connections. But marketing, you know, and creating those relationships, they're on Facebook. Email marketing, I think, pretty much for everybody should be a no-brainer. So your goal is, you know, when I first started the business, it was a lot of pounding the pavement. I went to networking events. Anybody I could get who was interested in what I was doing, with their permission, I added them to my email list. Now a big way that we get new leads is just we hold events at our studio. So if it's an educational seminar, somebody's more likely to come into your gym or facility to sit and listen to a speaker with a topic that resonates, versus coming in for a free workout. Now that's in our case, maybe not everybody, but in our case, women will generally come. We just did one last week. We limited the attendance to 40 people. We got 10 new leads converted almost, and then we gave them one of our starter packs. So as sort of a gift for coming, got their email address. That is so key, because then we could follow up and nice to meet you. So great. We've added you to our email list. We're going to send you recipes and motivation. And we had an 80% conversion rate in the last 2 weeks from that, which, you know, if I look at the revenue potential of that over the course of 12 months, it's potentially upwards of $10,000 in additional revenue from one event reaching out. That's going to give me a lot more bang for my buck than saying, hey, come for a free workout on a Saturday morning. That's scary for a lot of people. Plus, in my humble fitness professional opinion, I think you have to do a lot of diligence before you have somebody come in for a free workout. So, in terms of understanding where they are, so.
Oh, for sure. And Lindsay, I know you got to get going soon. Is there any advice or any message that you want to wrap up with today?
I think just, you know, and I hope that there are some valuable takeaways that I've given. You know, I think at a core, there's so much potential in this industry, and it kind of, you know, stabs my heart a little bit when I see trainers who don't see that potential. And I talk a little bit in cliche, but I think a lot of times it's because most of us don't have enough faith in ourselves, or we underestimate our abilities, and we don't ask. We don't ask for help. We don't seek out coaching or mentoring, and doing what you're doing, for example, Greg, with these podcasts. And there are so many resources out there, and I think our industry is probably one of the most giving industries. We just need to ask. So ask. If you're weak in understanding business, seek, you know, go out and ask for that advice. You're going to be stuck, you know, pedaling in the mud if not. So I think, and sort of to piggyback on that, we're all great trainers. I'm sure everyone on this call is highly qualified and is a great trainer, fitness professional, whatever you are. You won't have a meaningful career long term if you don't put some energy and effort and investing in really understanding how to make it a career, investing in, you know, whether it's your business or just as yourself as an individual, understanding the mechanics of business, basics of marketing, sales, it's imperative. And it's as imperative as, you know, learning the newest scientific knowledge and evidence on squatting or whatever it might be. And that's where I think a lot of trainers fall short. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, take the next, if you have a good solid base, you're going to be always learning about, you know, cueing and biomechanics. That's something just because it's a passion. But commit to, you know, 2 hours a week or a book a month or a podcast or something. Do that for the next year. Make that part of just what you do, non-negotiables every week, every day. Because in aggregate, you're going to be building, you know, a master's in business isn't going to teach you what you need to know. It's just doing it and practicing it and acting it. So I'm not really good at being succinct, Greg, as you've learned.
No, you're fine.
But I'm hoping that gives some good context and takeaways.
I think that was perfect. You actually made a really bold statement as saying that it's imperative to understand business and marketing as important as understanding how to squat.
And absolutely.
I think that's been a huge, again, just kind of underlying factor within our industry and a big reason why a lot of personal trainers exit the industry after X amount of years, because mm-hmm. they didn't get as passionate about the business, the marketing, psychology side as they did the exercise science side.
Right. You can only change as many lives as who know you. So if you don't know how to market yourself and get yourself out there, nobody's going to know how great you are at teaching squats. So, you know, it's you've got to be able to put yourself out there and do it in a way that reaps the benefits from a financial career. That's what gives us purpose. We want to teach people. We want them to get them in. That's what I mean by to sell them what they want, give them what they need. Sell them, get them in your door, because you know the minute you can sit down and talk to them, you can get them to become a client. But how are we going to get them there? And that takes, you know, time and investment in yourself.
That's perfect. Lindsay, I know you're very busy. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Greg. Thanks, everyone.
Oh, for sure. And PT Nation, thank you again for listening. We will talk soon.